Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We link to our guests. We will be giving you that website for today's guest here in just a few moments, and we encourage you to go there and see and hear what they have to offer. And I definitely encourage you to listen. Today, it's about sound. We're going to talk about a lot of different aspects. I mean, this is not a subject that is new. We've been talking about this time and time and time again, and that's because it's so important. One of the aspects of sound, and I have to say as we introduce our guest here in just a moment, that we talked about the power of words. Well, when you speak words, and quite honestly, even when you think them, you hear them usually. And there is a vibration going on there. There's an energy going out, a resonance, if you will. And that's why it's so important to be conscious, and I mean really conscious, of the words that you are using. In my experience over the years in that context, I have learned that you can work with someone to build them up, to encourage them, to inspire them, and on the list of those types of adjectives goes on and on and on. You can undo that in less than 30 seconds, and it will take another lifetime to build that back up, or it very well could. We're talking about sounds. We're also talking about the lost waves of time, the untold story of how music shaped, past tense, shaped our world. And my guest is the author of that work, and her name is Jill Mattson. Jill, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
It's a delight to be here, and I'm really excited about sharing these wonderful ancient secrets. They're very powerful.
Yeah, well, we're gonna reveal all those secrets now. We're gonna let all that information come out, and we're going to do what we can in that regard. Now, first of all, let's talk about your connection in the context of our conversation today regarding sound, and especially regarding the lost waves of time, and this aspect of how music has basically shaped our world. Let's start there in terms of your connection, if you will, to sound.
I went on a spiritual quest that had nothing to do with music. It was very personal. And I've been a musician, though, keep that in mind, since I was five. So I'm passionate about music. I'm very, very psychic. I love physics, and I know it's kind of geeky, but nothing's better than reading a physics book to me. And I love antiquity. I love learning. Geek. And this spiritual quest happened when I just, for kind of like, you know, fun and giggles, I decided the Bible, the Old Testament, as an autobiography from God, thinking that religion looked different from another perspective. As I got into the Old Testament, I was horrified at the God that was portrayed, an angry God, a jealous God, flawed God. I had an epiphany and a life change. I decided I would no longer accept anything but the most fabulous, light-filled, loving God, and I didn't care what name or religion it was. I was going for the best version of God I could imagine, knowing that that will impact who I am. So I started looking for the serpentine version of the Old Testament, got into the Kabbalah, loved that, shortly went into this ancient Sumerian mysteries. They were fabulous. They're just being transcribed. They were advanced mathematicians and had really cool ideas. Then I spent a good 25 years going from ancient mystery school to ancient mystery school. The Sumerian mysteries led me to the Egyptian, to the Chinese, to Lao Tzu, to Buddha, to the great Hindu traditions, Pythagorean mystery schools, and more. And it was quite a quest. For example, when I first read the papyri in Egypt on magic, I was thinking, man, what are these guys smoking? These guys are nuts. And, you know, maybe 8 years later, I read the same papyri. But this time, I had studied under Lao Tzu's teachings and Buddha's and theosophy. And I understood so much more. I'd written two books on sound by then. And then when I read the papyri again, influenced by Samaria, by India, by China, being psychic, being a physicist of sorts, I understood it. It just took years of having the lens of quantum physics and music and psychic skills and religion and all this kind of stuff combined to understand what they're talking about. The secrets that I learned, not only were they fascinating, mind-bending, and take you on a skyrocket for evolution, but each great societies, let's say Lao Tzu versus Egypt, each great society had like powerhouse secrets for sound and energy, but note they were all different. You know, what they're doing in Hawaii was different than what they were doing in Egypt, for example. And tricks I learned over many years is that each great spiritual avatar, let's say Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu, had an inner circle of disciples, adepts, initiates. And they had a school of sorts. But, you know, they had to feed them and they had to have an income, da, da, da. And they had to have students. So they were very secretive about their information, particularly the sound, being that it is, they considered the most powerful, not the best, but packs the most punch, and in the hands of someone selfish or immoral could be devastating. That's why it was so secret. But they would only pass these secrets down verbally, which means they died out as the culture died out. But here's the big but. They would have teasers. Like we go to decide what movie to go. We watch the trailers. And the movie trailers would dangle out like the best part. And you'll get like a taste, and then you can decide, do I or do I not want to go to this movie? And much the same, the mystery schools would dangle this secret and that secret out there. And by reading them all for many, many thousands of years and all over the globe, I believe I've pieced the whole puzzle together. And I understand the major gifts, the major sonic gifts, the major vibrational energy treatments per civilization, and furthermore, music is math. You can count cycles per second, rhythms, harmonics, intervals, all kinds of things. And the music across time unfolded sequentially, which I find fascinating. How did that happen? So anyway, I guess that's my answer to your question.
And in my study, and you've been studying this for quite a long time, but my research shows me, and what's fascinating to me is that a lot of the ancient languages, and the one in particular that I'm aware of, at least to some degree, Hebrew, and the alphabet has 22 characters, which I couldn't read if my life depended on it. But what I do know of this is that each of the individual characters has its own legend. It has its own numerical rating, if you will. It has its own vibration, a tone, frequency, etc. And it then, combined with other characters, creates a whole new legend. Connect those words together into sentences, a new legend, and so on and so on. I don't know that, for example, I don't know that the English language, the alphabet, the 26 characters, or any other, shall we say, more modern language, has that kind of legend and or subsequent power, if you will, that can be traced and that can actually be, what can we say, used in such a way as to be of benefit, if you will, or influence within our civilization?
I'd be glad to talk about that. Let's go back further than the Hebrew language.
Yes.
In the information coming from South America with the Incas, the Mayans, there's a lot of legends and information emerging about Atlantis or Atlan or a name close to that, and Lemuria. The stories tell that the early portions of these societies were highly psychic, probably not Homo sapiens. Think of, an elf or a fairy, telepathic for sure. And if you're telepathic, you don't need language. Language, in comparison to a telepathic communication, is just like a thumbprint. It's a sketch. It's a flimsy skeleton of the full meaning and energy of something. So why did language even develop? The original languages or sand was used like a jackhammer, like a tool. If you were fully clairvoyant, as these legends say, these very early people, not the people towards the end of Atlantis, the beginning, then you would use sound, you would be able to see like all the colors and sounds from your organs, your body processes, much like Sherry Edwards, whom I've written a book on her work, or Donna Eden with her clairvoyance. So if you could just take a look at you and see your heart getting a dark spot or sounding like crap, immediately you would know you have an issue, and they would hum it into tune. They would start using sounds, and they would play around with the sound that would restore the body to its perfect health. I've replicated that in my Deep Wave Body CD. I have the healthy sounds, harmonics, and the entire set of ancient associations for organs in your body, for you to not only tune your body, but learn how to tune your body on the spot after you've done it many, many, many times. So language started out as something that was purposeful. It was not to convey communication, and it certainly wasn't symbolic. As the civilizations began to lose their psychic abilities, language became very important. But yet it still held the power of its original intent, which is that it's an energy stream that modifies yourself, those around you, and your world. So there were five primary ancient languages of light, Hebrew being one. Another belief, another story from these ancient times, was that different pods of civilizations believed they came from a star system. For example, one group might believe they came from Pleiades, the next Arcturus, Orion, whatever. And you'll see this in the different stone circles where they align to constellations. That's kind of like if you believed you were from Orion, to emulate the shape resonance, which is a scientific phenomenon, of the Pleiades star system. And then that would be kind of like rebooting, starting back at zero, getting healthy, like my computer doesn't work, I reboot it. So they would like phone home or reboot to their original planetary system. And there were five different languages that were not only tools to enhance their lives, but also to connect and reboot them to their planetary systems. You can read a lot on this in the Keys of Enoch. The ancient languages being ancient Chinese, ancient Egypt, ancient Latin, Sanskrit, Hebrew, and each one is believed in these stories to connect to a different star system. And the different star systems were believed to resonate with the Earth. So we have kind of like a harmonic relationship with certain star systems. And so then as these skills and memories began to fade, then the ancient priests, let's say take us to the time of ancient Egypt now. Imagine putting sand on a drum and chanting underneath, or a circle of five priests holding a cloth between with sand on it and chanting. The chanting will change this, that will make the sand vibrate, and then it'll hit each other and bounce back. And for example, Om, singing Om, always creates the sound, the sign that they use for Om. So the little symbol that we have of Om is the sound representation. In the ancient languages, all of them, Hebrew plus all of them, but I'll talk about Egypt right now, their words were the energy representation of something. Not the symbol, but if, for example, Ben is walk forward, but Neb, the same thing spelled backwards, is walking backwards. So the word is actually an energy dosage. Because their language was so powerful, it was also used in voodoo and spells. In Egypt, when you were born, you were given two names. One, only your mother knew. You didn't even know it. And this was because your name was believed to be your energy signature, your thumbprint. No one was to know it, so nobody could link to you and send you bad juju. And so this is what the spells are. You think of Egypt and think of thousands of priests. I mean, they're the top of the food chain. These are the big dudes. What do they do all day for thousands of years? Well, one thing, they come up with spells. And they would analyze a word, as you mentioned in your question, for the vowel sounds and the consonants, where they resonate in your body. For example, ah generally resonates in the heart, whereas e or I kind of massages the top of your skull. So many sound words were concocted and were magic spells to be said over and over and over again to vibrate and clear stuck subtle energy and for health issues. And that's some of the origin of magic spells. They tested and they worked. They held special value for the vowel sounds. This would be in the ancient Hebrew tradition, all of them, every single one of them. Vowels, unlike a consonant, create rich harmonics. Think of a harmonic as an after ripple of sound. Clarence Darrow Miller, a man in the 50s and 60s, photographed them, and you can look at the physical shape created by an A versus the E. The photographs kind of look like different shaped carved stair banisters. But at any rate, each vowel has a different harmonic pattern, and I'll demonstrate it. I'm going to say two vowels on the same pitch, the identical pitch, yet you will perceive one sounds higher in pitch, and that's because its harmonic or after ripple throws more energy into the higher ripples. So here you go, A, E, exact same pitch, but the E sounds higher. Keeping that in mind, one path for enlightenment was to recite and have mantras on the whole gamut or whole range of possibilities of harmonics in different patterns, and that was obtained by the vowel sounds. Every mystery school, Chinese, Theosophy, Orient, Hebrews, all of them paid special attention to the vowels. Often the writings did not include vowels because they were too powerful to be left carelessly laying around. So they would have for enlightenment and death chants of different vowel sounds. And I have a video. I've recreated the Egyptian death chant, which was saved for the pharaohs, so they got all the good juju and the other people didn't. But during the time of passing, they would be doing these vow chants to connect to the Pharaoh, fill him full of light, so that when he goes to the other side, he goes as high as possible and then returns to take care of the Egyptian people. So I don't know, Richard, is that kind of a good enough answer, or do you have questions?
It gives us a starting point in that respect. And the thing about all of this is that when we are talking about the written language that, of course, is then spoken, or maybe vice versa, it's spoken and then written, that's an interesting aspect, especially when you were talking initially about how the civilizations, for example, of Atlantis and so forth, were telepathic. Ergo, even though everything is energy, even the telepathy, that's a form of energy, and there is a vibration there. I mean, all of the research, all of the study I've done has to do with those aspects. One of the things that I have kind of picked up on is, in spite of this aspect of sound in the spoken word, there's also a vibration within, even light is a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I'm thinking then in terms of telepathy, you're not in, and again, because I don't know that I'm even aware that I have telepathic abilities or have ever telepathically heard someone. But the closest approximation to descriptions I've heard is it's kind of like when you dream, you see images most of the time. Sometimes you'll hear sounds. Sometimes you'll feel even through all of your other senses as well. But it's imagery. Okay, I had a dream last night. It was in black and white, or it was in color, or it was this. But you usually describe what was happening. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I can only imagine that telepathy was the exchanging of images, okay, that are more descriptive than any words. Matter of fact, I've even heard it said that in spite of the fact that, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, 1,000 words could never describe that picture adequately, let alone accurately. So when we start thinking about the whole aspect of our minds and our consciousness, and learning to communicate in different ways and on different levels, even through music. I mean, I know you probably have your favorite music that you like to listen to, as do I, because, especially in my case, because it feels good. It not only brings back wonderful memories, but even in this day, it just feels good. It lifts me up, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And my music is not your music in that respect. There might be some similarities, but each one of us finds our own connection, if you will, our own music and so forth. And I'm wondering, in terms of that aspect of sound, finding those vibrations. Maybe someone's not really connected with, you know, music, be it classical or pop or jazz or hip hop or whatever it might be. And they hear, well, gee, that makes him feel good. I wish I could find music that did that for me. Where would one start in that regard to find those vibrations that will energize and will uplift and so forth and so on?
Okay, I'm glad to answer that. But first, I just wanted to comment on your first reaction, which was the energy and sound. I don't seem to know where the on button is, but I am telepathic at times. And what I have experienced when it happens is not symbols, but an incredible deep knowing. It's like consciousness has levels. It has a mental, physical, emotional, spiritual level. If you have two violins and you pluck the A on one and the other violin's nearby, the untouched A string will begin to sing. So energy transfers on the same note. So likewise, if you can correlate the cycles per second of, let's say, colored light, and take the color red, take it down musical octaves, same note, bum, bum, just divide it by two. And you can come to, it relates to the musical note C. Or activities in your heart, or gross circulation, or action-oriented emotions. And it's quite scientific. And I have a book on this called Secret Sounds, Ultimate Healing. But so when I experienced telepathy, it was like the deep knowing I had was all levels. It was just very, very, very complete. And it was hard to describe because it was so dense. Okay, and now I want to go into your second question. And I want to say one thing is that each of us has a different personality. And our emotions, our thoughts, and our unique health issues are all different frequencies. So I'm a big twinkling cluster of sounds, and that's different from your little symphony because we're different. So enlightenment, which would have been the goal for incarnating in ancient belief systems, would be having a balance or a mastery of all emotions, all thoughts, everything in the physical world. So if you can correlate the emotions, and this I write about this in the book Secret Sounds Ultimate Healing, you can break your voice into component pitches and see that your voice is holographic. You can look at how your liver's doing or the argument you had last night. It's in your voice. In the free software program at nanovoice.org, given to us by Sherry Edwards, you can take a look, you can correlate the tones and the colors in your voice. For example, my personality is such that I radiate a lot of blue, and I'm almost empty on orange. I find most of my friends radiate orange. You play a bunch of music for me, I invariably like one in the key of D or orange, if you will, because if you have something in the key signature, it's going to have a heavy dose of that note. So I find uniquely I'm attracted to music that's very healing for me, which is quite different than you. So I would recommend that people trust their feelings. If something feels good, listen, 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 and listen. Then furthermore, there's another type of music. In ancient times, they differentiated it. One for you, one for me, but yet some were generic. And my music, I've captured their sound patterns, and I put the generic sound patterns audibly in the music. It's my music that I've written and performed. But according to the physicist of Robert Becker, I put these ancient tonal patterns, secrets, and little tuning forks in the background for a very powerful, subtle punch. I have star tones that was an ancient enlightenment path, ascension codes, enlightenment codes, one from the Hebrews, sacred geometry, which is numbers converted from nature, converted to cycles per second or sound. I have emotional catharsis and virtue building from the Greek. Chakra building, like chakra on steroids, way powerful. I even have vitamins and the ancient angelic and master rays and energies. I mean, you can deliver any pathway to enlightenment and sound. The ancient understood it to be powerful because you can listen, listen, listen. You can put it in the background, give it no willpower or thought. And it's like mainlining light. You can sleep with it. It's the fast track. Mm-hmm. Because with willpower, it's one step forward, one back, one forward, one back. But you can transform quickly and powerfully with sound. And that was what I found with all my research in antiquity.
All of this, of course, for me, very fascinating because obviously it's sort of the realm in which I have been for nearly 40 years, specifically, especially dealing with sound and editing and all those types of things. And then I discovered probably almost 20 years ago this interesting technique. I discovered it. I didn't create it, mind you, in terms of something that I shared with a gentleman by the name of Stephen Lewis, who wrote a book called Sanctuary. And he's using vibrations in a little different way. And this is sort of in the context of the whole aspect of my question regarding telepathy and images. He takes your photograph and basically he analyzes it with his computer, and then he sends out the counter vibrations that will help to balance you. But this is an ongoing process because it's like peeling the layers of an onion. You know, It's not done instantaneously. The entire body, from outer to inner core, it takes time. And so when I first met him, I had discovered this interesting technique with my sound editing software, in terms of taking a true stereo left-right separated recording, taking one of the channels out of phase and mixing the two into a monaural signal, and the similar wave forms or frequencies would be eliminated because they would cancel each other out in this unbalanced or phased unphased sequence, and then the dissimilar ones would be brought to the foreground. So basically, I was able to create the equivalent of soundtrack to sing along with. If it was a vocal, I could turn it into an instrumental for the most part, and if it was a monaural left right, and you took one of the channels out of phase and then mixed them together, the wave disappeared because they were identical. Mm-hmm. And the similar frequencies canceled each other out. Poof, you have silence. And I thought, gee, I wonder if this is where they get the concept for the noise-canceling headphones, that kind of thing, and so forth. So it was really very interesting. And by the way, I actually went to that website you mentioned, and I'm looking at this little chart that they have in terms of the emotional and physical, shall we say, effects or benefits. And it goes through what looks like the chakra colors, but they're divided up a little bit more than just seven. And you start with C, D, E, F, G, A, B, and then B, C, and that's at the top of the list, B/C. And I find it fascinating that a lot of this stuff it's just been there, okay? It's just been there. And like I talk about Chinese medicine, it's been around for 5,000 years. There's no FDA approval necessary because they just knew that it worked. And it still works to this day. So when we start talking about this issue of sound, and we start talking about these tones, and the way we've broken down the scales from A through G, you'd think I'd remember that from my piano lessons. And then, of course, you have your sharps, your flats, and then all of the tones between. And then you have other types of music that you talk about in your book. You talk about, as you've already discussed, of course, Lemurian, Atlantis, and so forth. First civilization, Sumer, and its music. But the one that I'm, of course, most intrigued by is the Carnatic ragas and benefits. And of course, for those who aren't familiar, raga has to do with the Eastern Indian form of music, or Hindu or Tibetan, depending upon how you want to look at that. And there are different tones, if you will. And that's something that I found interesting, because I've heard a gentleman share that all of the great songs have all been written. There are no more great songs to be written. There are no more great tunes, melodies, and so forth. And I'm sitting here looking at, for example, if you were to draw out a chart from A through G and all of the sharps and the flats and all of the intricacies, it's an infinite, I want to say infinite and not finite, series of notes that can be played. And then you have your whole notes, your half notes, your quarter notes, your eighth notes, 16th, and so on and so on. And then you have the various volumes. I know that there are Latin terms for these, but the crescendos and so on and so forth. And it just seems to me like the combination of all of the different aspects of creating music, how could that be possible that all of the great works have been written? I don't see it.
I'm not sure that that's so, but let me go back again on your comments.
Sure.
First of all, with your noise canceling, I believe that that's the secret of Royal Rife, a doctor in the 40s?
Yes, actually the 30s. I actually narrated his video.
Yeah, he was killing 800, according to the book I read, 800 mm-hmm. out of 800 cases of cancer.
Yes.
My understanding was that he, this is just my understanding, that he was looking into the microscope and looking at a live cell. He would
Correct.
Not, and then when you look at that, you can see how it goes, breathes like a jellyfish, like a blob breathing in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And with physics, you can measure and come up with the exact cycle per second of that cell. So let's say it's 800 cycles per second. Their medicine would be listened to 1 over 800 cycles per second to cancel out the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at the Rife books, and they will have basically the canceling frequency for most maladies. And Sherry Edwards takes it even further, because she will go into, and this is in my Secret Sounds Ultimate Healing book, things like, let's say, your digestion, which you don't want to cancel anything out. You want to amplify. By comparing frequencies to the periodic chart of elements, she can look at, like, your digestion, the chemical formula, reduce it to tones, and see where you wake, and boost your healthy body processes. So that's one thing. Then I also want to skip on another comment you said. You were talking about that these secrets, they've been there all along.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they have. Think of our language. I was red with anger, green with envy, and I feel blue today.
Mm.
See, we know these somewhere deep, deep, deep down.
Mm-hmm.
And to talk about the Hindu ragas, let me say this. First of all, the major place in the earth that still has any of this healing music I'm talking about, it's just India of any major civilization. And I've been lucky to have the help of Sri Swamiji Sakananda Ganapathy. I have a beautiful chapter of him in my Ancient Sounds Modern Healing book. He's an ascended master on earth, and he heals with music. So he's the living, breathing version of the ancient science. He goes to a concert with thousands. He'll often use a crystal and close his eyes. I believe that he's seen colors which correlate to illness, as you saw in that chart when you went to that website of nanovoice.org.
Mm-hmm.
Then he can tell the major illness in the audience. And then he times it to the celestial stars. We are very influenced by frequencies coming in from space. And I have a Stardust CD to take that and turn that into a blessing. But he will modify challenges coming in from space. He uses ancient elemental correlations. And then they will perform music to heal the audience on the spot. I mean, I've gone and had acupuncture teachers gone completely unconscious at his concerts. Amazing. But let me say this about the Hindus. I said earlier, each of these fabulous societies had something unique. The others didn't. What I believe is just fabulous and overlooked is the Hindu rhythm situation. Today, most of our music has a bum, ba bum, like a 1-2 kind of a feeling,
mm-hmm.
or a bum, 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 a 3 kind of a feeling. A few variations, but that's basically it. You can have 127 beat pattern in a raga. So they would look at sacred geometry, which is shapes, but they would listen, and they would listen to water lap or the feet of a horse running, how it clip-clops, and they would make rhythms from nature. And they applied rhythms in a healing modality. So one of the most important things going on in your Hindu ragas is those fabulous, complex drumming going on in the back. There's a crisscross relationship between rhythms and pitches. Any pitch has a rhythm. Like if you're on a street, car comes by with the stereo subwoofer blast, and you can feel the boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
You can count the rattles in your bone as you ingest that. So that you can count them. So there's your rhythm in a pitch. And likewise, every rhythm has a pitch. Bum, 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 bum. And they're basically two different toolboxes that can be used to do the same thing. And I find that the overlooking prize in the Hindu tradition is its rhythm. Really cool. They have a rhythm to heal anything. And then they add tones and pitches to boot to amplify the dosage or power.
Well, I have to say that this process of basically learning these things to facilitate not just one's healing, but and maybe it falls under the same category of one's, you know, shall we say, balancing and or centering and or being able to get to that place where they then are able to find their life's purpose. They can live the life that they came here to live, to accomplish the things that they came here to accomplish, such as what you and I are trying to do here in sharing this information. And we encourage people to go to your website, which is jillswingsoflight.com. And we encourage you to check out, of course, the information that she has available on her website, CDs, books, I mean, all kinds of information, also other links as well. And to me, this all is just unbelievably fascinating. And of course, there's never enough time. But speaking of time, we are going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more with Jill Mattson. And of course, she has a couple of books here that we're talking about the lost waves of time. We're also talking about the ancient sounds, modern healing. And then there's also the secret sounds, ultimate healing. And I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Jill Mattson, and we're talking about sound. We're talking about not just making sound. It's kind of funny in a way, Jill, that I was thinking about this when I was visiting my parents back in Phoenix for their 60th wedding anniversary, that I got to see my aunt, and I remember distinctly that when I was a kid, a small kid, I was running around in the backyard, and I was, you know, sort of like that experience of, Mom, look at this, watch this, watch this, watch me, watch me, you know, I need your attention. Mm-hmm. Just standing there and wanting to talk, you know, and participate in the conversation, to which one of my aunts, you know, she made the comment to me, says, you need to move, you need to be quiet. Just be quiet. But I didn't take that to heart because I haven't been quiet since. But I'm hopefully making sense of the things that that I share and that we talk about here on this program. And you have, as we mentioned going to break, you have not just books, but you also have CDs, music that's available for folks to check into and to use as tools, if you will. Maybe I guess the best way to put it is to better their lives, to balance, if you will, body, mind, and soul. When did you first start creating your own sounds as far as these CDs in particular that you have put together?
As I was doing this research, I just felt like doing it. I've been a musician, but I've been a classical violinist. I sat down the very first time and wrote a symphony, and I knew how to do it. No training.
Wow.
I don't know. It's just innate with me. And I want to talk a little bit about my Healing Flower Symphonies because it speaks to one using music to find their life purpose. When I did my Healing Flower Symphonies, I was excited about the ancient Greeks who were looking at enlightenment, meaning being healthy, happy, and thinking good thoughts through the window or doorway of emotions. For example, if you feel like crap, you're probably not in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa. So that if you can balance and master your emotions, that in turn affects your thinking and your physical health. They did like a two-step process. They did cathartic release, and then they would build a virtue. A virtue is an energy. It's a vibration, cycle per second. and you saw it on that NanoVoice chart. So what I did was I started creating flower symphonies, and I created flowers, let's put it this way, with the flower essence is a little product you can buy, and it's the essence of a flower. And flowers have subtle essences. Rose, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yet a daisy, cheerful. So you could, if you're depressed, you might buy a little vial and take drops of cheerfulness through the flower energy of a daisy. Well, I got the frequencies of those and put them in my music. So let's say we'd have music where I'm playing a patience, an impatience flower. It's loaded with the frequency audible in the background of patience. So anyway, I went and I built this matrix of positive emotions with two CDs. And I tested it in a nursing home, and it was horrible. I was lucky I didn't get beaten with a cane. Anyway, of course, my audience was captive. They're all in wheelchairs. But at any rate, what I found was that when you're terribly miserable, and it's very annoying to listen to positive stuff. People who are really like broken, they want to listen to sad music and go get drunk. And if the Greeks were aware of this, that it's like any emotion is a vibration, gets stuck in your body. For example, if you worry, that's a certain cycle per second. It's the same cycle per second as the lining in the tissue of your tummy. So if you worry enough, that energy through resonance, remember we talked about the violins and energy transferring on the same frequency. Mm-hmm. All that negative stuff builds up in your tummy and you get an ulcer. So what the Greeks would do is that they would get music to get in there and to vibrate that crap and kind of like dig it out so you could release it. And so I realized at the nursing home that we needed to catharsis as a society, probably more than we need virtue building. Because if you're, for example, full of terror, you know, Yankee Doodle Dandy listening probably isn't going to make you brave. Mm-hmm. So what I did in my Healing Flower Symphonies was I pulled out negative emotions. And if you have intent to heal, you'll feel the crap going out. So sometimes it's for a second, not pleasant. And that's the only way to heal, because you will feel it as it leaves your fields. And if you don't feel it, you haven't healed it. So, and then to build the virtue. And what I want to say about your life purpose is that your life purpose feels really good. And that's how I got into this, not worrying about succeeding or being a success or even where I was going. I just went with what felt good. And it didn't make sense. But then years later, I could pull all the pieces together. And then in retrospect, it was great. But life throws crap at everybody. And we become numb. So if someone hurts us and we're being brave or not letting it bother us or trying to forgive, whatever, we're loaded down with negative stuff and our body subconsciously numbs so we can move on without being overwhelmed by pain. But when we numb, our body numbs our emotions across the board. So those who have been very responsible and stood up often will tell you, I have no idea what feels good for me. They don't feel it. So if you want to use music to uncover your life purpose, I would recommend my flower symphonies and start to clear some of that crap that we've held for lifetimes. That we even pick up negative energy from people we're in close proximity to. Mm-hmm. And start to get rid of it so that you can regain your sense of feeling, because that's how you find your purpose in life.
You know, in talking about the healing process, I had an experience when I was very young. I had the flu or something, and I was laying in bed. And one of my sisters and my mother were standing there next to the bed, and I was lying there moaning. And this went on for I don't know how long, and my sister says to my mother, make him stop. It sounds terrible. And she says, no, that's how he heals himself.
She's correct.
Yeah. And I've been doing that and telling everybody that I run across who is dealing with some issue of dis-ease, that if you feel like moaning, do it. And just let the tone come. Don't try to select one. Just let it come.
Mm-hmm. Your body will sing you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your body is a musical instrument in that respect.
It is.
And it's amazing how these kinds of things are so innate within us, but we have so forgotten. You know, and darned if I'm going to the FDA to make sure that that's approved by them, that I can continue doing it. No, not going there.
But hey, on my site, just a thought.
Yes.
I have samples. If you sign up for the free music, I have samples of star tone music,
mm-hmm.
of sacred geometry and ascension code music, of one of the flower symphonies, and one of the organ tuning, and I think even an angelic or master ray tuning. So, I mean, they're free samples on the homepage of jillswingsoflight.com.
And we're also going to go out of the program with one of those tracks, as a matter of fact, if you don't mind, to share that with folks so that they can get an idea of what it is that you're doing and what you're sharing with them and how you're trying to assist them and facilitate their own healing, their own consciousness raising, which is really what this is all about, is trying to move upward and onward. And to that end, I want to ask you about the various types of music in that, you know, just in that loose term, that have come about over the throughout the ages to do that very specific thing, and that is to raise the consciousness of mankind.
I believe the two, I've replicated that. They did that in tonal patterns that would light up your aura. If your aura is full of white light, that means you have balance in all emotions, all physicality. And if you're highly clairvoyant, you could see what tonal patterns light up your aura. And you referenced fondly the Hindu ragas. Those are meant to be played at different times, because played at the right time of day, mixing with the environmental and sun energy that varies during the day, they light up your aura. And I've taken those tonal patterns and put them in the Paint Your Soul CD and the Stardust. In the Stardust CD, the people literally tune to the stars, and they make sounds below our hearing range. So with physics, I figured out our solar system, and I have it raised into our hearing range, and it twinkles in the background, as well as I put in the frequencies of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, elements of the stars, and actually they're involved in our DNA as well. And our bodies and stars are made out of them. That would be the type of music that would be consciousness raising for a society. And I just put the tones in the background because in ancient music, they wouldn't use our scales, they wouldn't use our instruments, and it would be difficult to listen to. And again, going off the work of Robert Becker.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
She's a cutie, if that helps. You know, he's saying the most impactful tones are like star tones, very subtle ones. So mm-hmm. that's how my medicine is. No, I wouldn't say medicine. That's how my tuning and harmonizing is done in my music.
I've got another one for you here that goes a little further out, but along the same lines, and that is, what kinds of vibrations or tones or sounds that are being picked up by our various satellites and radar, or I can't even think of the term right off the top of my head now, listening devices, are being, say, transmitted universally. Across the universe, if you will. Are you aware of anything along those lines that are of any kind of are connected in any way with what we've been discussing here?
Well, I do know that you can buy, I think it's off of Motorola, the frequencies coming in from the day. And if you look at Sherry Edwards, Sharry website, she has something called keynotes. She buys them for like $9.99 a day. And then she'll say, she'll correlate them to the periodic chart of elements. So she'll say, hey, today we're getting a frequency of zinc. If you have a cold, you're probably going to have a good day. So she takes the space sounds, mm-hmm. literally recorded, and correlates them to things through octave resonance, things that will impact it and things that we know of. If there's something beyond that, I'm not aware of it.
Okay. Because I know that there is a constant vibration that is going on in the universe that basically, you know, because I hear about, for example, I had an interview not too long ago with a gentleman talking about these nine different waves, if you will, that have been moving and passing through our universe for the last, you know, million years, and we're now in wave nine, but we're being impacted by all of the waves, if you will. And to me, again, we're still, when talking about those kinds of waves, we're still talking about vibration. We're still talking about frequency. I mean, even television uses frequencies. They're mm-hmm. just not ones that we can hear with our human ear, the eardrum and so forth. But we can certainly sense them. We can become aware of these kinds of things. And that's kind of where that question was coming from. Just thinking too in terms of other civilizations in the universe who, knowing what we're going through right now here on this planet, depending upon which current event you would like to bring up, they're probably sitting there going, you know, we need to help them. Let's send them some healing energy. Let's send them a healing tone, you know, a balancing tone, that kind of thing.
If we're shifting off of that and going into the psychic realm and psychic information, mm-hmm. I believe that we're getting downloads. At least I know I have been. Mm-hmm. There's an ancient tradition of listening to sounds of silence. It's popular in the Old Testament, the Hebrews, the Chinese, the Hindus, etc. And a devotee or a student or disciple mm-hmm. would just listen to inner body sounds. And I did that for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, there's a chipmunk outside.
Oh, my goodness. Well.
I'm so sorry.
No worries. No worries at all. We're talking.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. It's all right.
Chipmunk, hey. Come on.
We're talking with Jill Mattson, and we're getting some interesting vibrations from her dog, and it's perfectly all right. We don't have a problem with that because folks
so
are
sorry.
We are broadcasting using Skype, and when you're in someone's home like we are today at Jill Mattson's, then these kinds of things happen. Could be a baby crying, it could be ambulances going by. You just never know, and that's life. And life is going on around us. But anyway, back to what you were talking about in terms of.
Yes.
These types of, shall we say, psychic impressions or awareness.
So I would listen to literally through my body. And I spent years and I got sounds of oceans, birds, bells, bagpipes, all kinds of things. And again, I've written about this in, I think it's in Secret Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the different sounds, when you learned to listen into your body, they would progress you in different spiritual levels and help you open up spiritual gifts. I did it for about 20 years, and I went through about 8 of maybe 12 different levels. And then I started to get broadcasts, meaning when I'm listening to the silence, I hear little bells. And they're rich. They're like a kaleidoscope of bells. And they're high-pitched, and they vary during times of the day and when I'm paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we are all getting the people who are interested in receiving such light and consciousness evolution are receiving them. Just my opinion.
I know, too, because of the area in which I live, but I actually was able to hear this in Phoenix. But when I was living there in the residential areas, it wasn't nearly the level of congestion and sounds and so forth. But I've actually been able to hear, at least I think I was hearing, for example, it was described as the sound of the planet, the vibration of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where I live now, I can get far enough away from the highway where I don't hear it at all. And so now I'm in the midst of the woods and the rocks and all of that. And just listening to silence, I may hear the breeze blowing through the trees, which is perfectly fine in that respect. But I know that if you really sit still, and of course you mentioned too, the Old Testament especially, where it talks about be still and know that I am God. Or another phrase listen to the still, small voice inside.
Revelations talks about these different levels of sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's kind of coded, but it talks about the sounds of running waters, the sounds of the ocean. It lists many of the levels right in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, excuse me.
Yeah. What has always been fascinating to me, this is one of the things that has sort of troubled me in this day and time. I can certainly pull out whatever version of the Bible, and I probably have 10 of them at home. And I can do a little research as far as sound is concerned what have you. But when I want to learn about the same concept from other religions, for example, I'm interested and curious about what, for example, the Quran says. I am familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, for example, and the Vedas and the Upanishad and so forth. But when you want to research certain things today, boy, you better have a hard copy of it, because you start going, for example, online and red flags go up all over the place going, oh my gosh, what is he doing? What is he reading? And it's like, come on, I'm curious. I remember I interviewed a gentleman many years ago. Gosh, it's got to be 20, 25, 30 years ago. He was with an organization that was in Phoenix at the time, it was called CAMP, C-A-M-P, Christians and Muslims for Peace. And I did this long interview with this guy, fascinating conversation. Now, there was this woman that was sort of following him around. She was an anti-groupie, if you will. followed him, I should say. When he mentioned that he was going to be on my radio program back in Phoenix, she called the radio station telling us we were being used of the devil. Well, I passed this information on to my boss because he does not like to be surprised, to which he said, I need to hear the interview. So I sent him a copy. And his first question was, are you Muslim? As if that would make any difference. And I said, well, no, I'm just curious. And this is the kind of stuff that was going on, quite honestly. This was back in the 80s, early 90s, where I was asked that question. It's like, why can't an individual just pursue their interests without being questioned or, in a manner of speaking, harassed about what they're doing? So when
going back to antiquity, they would say that this is the age of Violet due to our position of our solar system in the Platonic year. This mm-hmm. is just antiquity ideas. And the age of Violet is one of transmutation and purity, because antiquity would say that we're going into a golden age, an age of harmony. And right before you get to harmony, you have intense cathartic release and dissonance and secrets, dirty secrets that have been held for many, many years. They're all coming out.
Yeah.
In the earth in her own way, with the violent weather patterns, is also releasing that negativity in us, in our personal lives, our letting go, or getting ill.
Yeah.
But hopefully we're letting go of all kinds of crap that we thought we hid from ourselves. And it's a time period in which perhaps our position in the solar system creates the frequency of violet. And on my Angels and Masters CD, I have like a cut called the Rainbow Garden, where I have music in pink, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. And I channel Angels and Masters, their energy. Just because you can't hear it doesn't mean it doesn't record.
Mm-hmm.
So I load pink with pink masters and celestial energy and tones. And then I go into the rainbow coast, but colors. But violet, which I believe we're in a violet age, is is bringing all this stuff out. And every age has like a final exam before you get to the next one. To me, the final exam of purity and transformation, it's terrorism. It's lack of freedom. And I think that we're like in the throes of transferring to a new age. Mm. And this is our final exam. That's just my opinion.
I kind of feel the same way as you've described it, because first of all, I'm unable to wrap my brain around this whole concept, whether it's our modern age, whether you go back to the Crusades, you go back to the Vikings, you just keep going back and you see all of these types of things happening around the world throughout the course of human history. I've never been able to wrap my mind or my brain around the concept of wanting to, have power and control over people. And I struggle with that concept even with my dogs and cats. You know, I must maintain the attitude of trying to understand why they do what they do, because they don't do stuff for no reason at all. Also, I've not been able to wrap my brain around the concept of individuals who feel that it is necessary to snuff out their lives along with a bunch of other people. I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're trying to bring about this new world that you conceive of, but if you blow yourself up, you don't get to enjoy it. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's very strange. But at the same time, there's this piece of me inside somewhere that resonates with what you just said and the way that you put it. And I know that Barbara Marx Hubbard, also on this program many years ago, she was on this program talking about that we're birthing, you know, into this new age, this new consciousness and so forth. And that when a woman, I have no points of reference here, mind you, but when a woman gives birth, it ain't easy. So for us to reach that new child state, if you will, the born individual, we have to go through the pains. And I think that's kind of what you're referring to as well.
Yes, yes. And well, the good news is that I believe we're going to go into an age of pink, which is like motherly love.
Yeah.
But we've got a little birthing yet.
Yeah. I remember working for the religious station back in Phoenix back in the 80s and 90s, and I kept hearing the messages about, you know, end times and the end of the world and Armageddon and so forth. And, of course, I'm aware that they've been talking about this for centuries. And so I asked someone, I says, is there anything that I can do to help precipitate this process? Because this story is really getting tiresome and old, and I would like to help to bring about Armageddon, if necessary, so we can move on to more peaceful, harmonious times. You know, it's like,
careful what you wish for.
Yeah, how can I help? You know, but I, at the same time, I'm certainly not interested in harming anyone. And I, the whole point in what you're doing and what we're trying to do with this radio program is to lift people up, to encourage them to move forward, to find those new ways of living. And I think through both the work that you're doing, the books and the CDs, as well as our conversation here, I'm hoping that we're able to do more of that for folks. That, you know, we don't have to, as individuals, go down that particular road. The world's going down it regardless, and we're going to have to deal with, you know, the waves, if you will. But you know, we will get to the other side. You know, we always do, don't we?
In some of my CDs, I have the Schumann frequency, which is named after a man, Schumann, who discovered that the Earth in her rotation, if you imagine that the ionosphere, just for easy sake, we'll pretend like there's a plastic bubble around the Earth, mm-hmm. and sonic waves kind of like ripple within the ionosphere to the Earth, mm-hmm. and lightning strikes create such a resonance that we get like this standing wave. They use it in space flights because without the standing wave, the astronauts get sick. It's mm-hmm. also associated with healing. I have it in the background of many of my CDs.
Right.
But lately, the Schumann resonance has been rising. And I don't know that the ionosphere has changed. So back to your earlier question, are there other space frequencies? I don't know. Maybe they're wrong about what causes the Schumann resonance, because It supposedly is a stable frequency. It's spiking. It's altering. It's changing. So we are getting a different frequency from that science can detect.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps it's about our space, you know, as a galaxy or orbit or something like that. I really don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know as a galaxy, we would orbit around the, you know, the great central sun. And our distance from that would change in an orbit,
which
would create different frequencies. I don't know.
Well, I have to say that we could go on for another hour or two continuing to talk about these different aspects. But the fact is that if we sit still and we just try to listen, you know, I wouldn't even make the attempt to try to quiet anything. I would just really focus on opening my ear waves, if you will, or what have you, ear passages, hearing to listen, but not just with the ears, but with the whole body. And begin to try to gather in, you know, the messages that are needed for this time and this age. And then share that with others, just as you are doing here on the program. Before I let you go, first of all, I would like to encourage you, if you ever find yourself here on the south coast of California at Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
That sounds lovely.
And also to let our listeners know that Jill's wingsoflight.com is the website where you can check out all of the information we have been talking about. We encourage you to go there. And we also would like to, before we wrap up, Jill, I've got three final questions for you. The first is, who is Jill Mattson?
Jill is a lover of music, of nature, of physics, of spirituality, of love, of healing.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I am raising the consciousness of people so that they begin to use sound in a positive and meaningful way, to use it for their benefits and not be misused by others' misuse of sound. I am the music that heals millions and millions of people.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
There's many, but the primary one is to bring back the ancient methods of powerful enlightenment. I believe humanity's a little bit behind the eight ball of where we should be for the transitions that we're undergoing. The fast track way is going to be sound. Sound in your space, even if you're not there listening to these sounds. Music is inexpensive, accessible, drive-by healings. I have very accessible products. Listen and be changed.
Mm. Well, Jill Mattson, thank you so much for sharing so much time with us here on the program. And again, we encourage people to go to Jill's wingsoflight.com, jillswingsoflight.com, and check out all of the information that we've been talking about. Maybe grab up a couple of her CDs and some of the written materials as well in the books that we have been talking about here on the program. And we encourage you to do just that. And again, The Lost Waves of Time is the latest work that she has out right now, having to do with the ancient vibrational energy secrets that are now revealed through this particular work. And Jill, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm Richard. I will indeed. And thank you so much for listening. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.
Welcome to the Garden of the Heavens, to the Garden of Life. The color of red is infused with white light and termed the pink ray. The pink ray expresses the energy of love, adoration, creativity, and compassion. Masters and angels radiating the pink ray are Kuan Yin, Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary, Dom Ignatio, Paul the Venetian, Krishna, and Mat. The angel Shamuel also exudes the pink energy. The pink ray has the frequency of the musical note C, and to a lesser extent, C sharp and B, representing red violet and red orange. Feel the energy of the beings in the pink ray. Simply by meditating to the music and the sounds, you will soak up the blessings.